Tribe Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Mum Tribe Podcast.
We're on episode 3, which is very exciting. Thank you very much for your responses to the last episode. It was difficult sharing our birth stories to a certain extent.
Yeah, I hope you weren't too horrified. I'm sure certain people were, but look, sure, here we are. You know everything about us now.
And we're going to go deeper.
Inside and out.
There's that dirty laugh again.
Oh, no. Okay, I can't laugh and I can't say like and I can't say M or
Okay. The likes were pretty good. Yeah, so today we are going to talk about postnatal depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
So trigger warning, I suppose, for anyone who maybe has suffered from this in the past. And we'll probably post some links for people to maybe go to if they do want some assistance.
Definitely.
But we're just going to talk about our own experiences. So neither of us are medical professionals. Neither of us are doctors. We're just mums who kind of got thrown into the deep end here.
And who got through it.
Yes.
That's important to note.
That so is quite important.
If you are in the thick of it at the moment, then, you know, hold tight. But look, we'll talk about it anyway. And we'll see, as usual, like any feedback that you have. I just said like again. As usual, if there's any feedback that you have or you want us to kind of go deeper on one of the topics that we touch on, definitely let us know, you know, where my email address is, and we'll put the contact links up at the end of the episode. But yeah, we'll get cracking, will we?
What was your experience with anxiety and postnatal depression? When did it kind of
kick on
for you?
Straight away.
Was it?
Yeah. I think, obviously, well, I hope everyone's heard my birth story now so that they know. And if you haven't, go back to episode 2. Yeah, I had a birth that wasn't to plan. So I think I was already on the back foot once my son was born. Pretty much when we got back to the room and he was in the cot next to me, I couldn't relax. I was so hyper and tense, worrying that something was going to happen to him because, like, you know, of all the things that had happened while I was giving birth. I remember him being in the cot and just staring at him going, is he okay? Is he okay? I can't go to sleep now because what if he needs me? What if I don't wake up because I'm so exhausted? Because I think at this stage was I like 2 days without any sleep at all. So it was very hard. But I just kept thinking to myself, like, something will happen him if I don't watch him at all times. Like, he is my baby and now I need to mind him. So I didn't sleep that night. I actually laid in the bed the entire night and stared at him. Once my husband left to go home, I was awake and that was it.
And was baby asleep?
Oh, fast asleep.
Okay.
Like, my fella was conked, just so happy. Now, I suppose as well, like, I had issues. I tried to breastfeed him. He wouldn't latch. I was really worried that he wasn't getting enough. And then I had midwives coming in. Some were very helpful, others had a different approach, I suppose, if you want to say it that way. And it ended up me having to hand express into a cup and use a syringe to feed him. But what also happened was, so I think what a newborn is every 2 hours when they're breastfed. So every hour I had to hand express into a cup.
Okay.
Because it took me a whole hour to get anything out.
Yeah, because it's that sticky colostrum that you're
colostrum,
like,
yeah. They were like, he's getting colostrum, it's fine, it's fine. Mm. And just in my mind, like, my family are massive feeders in general.
Yeah. And hungry people. Like mine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know. And I was just saying, oh, he's not getting enough. He's obviously starving. You know, I was really worried about it. So hand expressing, trying to syringe him with the colostrum, so I didn't sleep at all. And then the next day we had a visitor when we didn't want visitors, and that visitor, midway trying to take the baby out of my arms, told me that they had been vomiting the night before and that they were really sick.
Oh my god.
And that really was like just like alarm bells ringing in my head, and I was like, oh my god, he's like, something's gonna happen to him. I was actually convinced that he was gonna get this illness and die, basically. That's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
And it went from there. And so that was like a day old, and that lasted right through until he was 2, and I finally went and got medical help. So
did you know yourself there was something wrong?
Oh, absolutely, Ellen. I mean,
but it took you 2 years to admit it to yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. I think.
Were you diagnosed by someone else, or are you self-diagnosed?
No, I was diagnosed by a doctor.
Okay.
So, like, I suppose the way I could go through it is, we got home and mine kind of manifested into anger with my husband because he couldn't understand why I was so worried.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why he was so relaxed. Really, but it was...
And it wasn't just a man-woman thing.
It wasn't a man-woman. Yeah. I remember he was trying to be helpful and he brought him outside one night in his baby grow in the buggy with, like, nothing on him. And he was like, oh, but when the air hits him, he goes to sleep. And I actually remember shrieking like a mad woman, saying, bring the child in. He's going to get pneumonia. He's going to die. Crying. Like, my anxiety was crying. All I did was cry.
Okay.
But I'm like... I'm not going to mention the person's name on Instagram, but I remember talking to her and she was like, that's my thing. That's my outlet. I cry when I'm happy and cry when I'm sad. And I was like, I relate to that so much. Like in my family, everyone's like, oh, you're always so emotional, but that's just my release. You know, some people like laugh when they're nervous. I just cry at everything. So yeah, it affected my marriage because I really distrusted the way he was parenting versus my parenting because I thought my way was the only way. There was other factors that I won't really go into, but were like extremely damaging and really affected me mentally to the point where I was doubting myself and getting very paranoid about things. And yeah, it just kept going and rolling and rolling. And we got to Christmas Day actually, and we stayed in my sister's house, and I never forget it. It was meant to be this lovely day, and because all my family are around, I thought, okay, I can actually take this opportunity to relax. So bearing in mind now he was born at the end of August, this is obviously the end of December, so 4 months in, you would have said, like, you know, oh, you're starting to kind of calm down a bit and everything would be much better. But I lost it. I absolutely lost it. I had a glass of Prosecco. I was so happy with myself. Like, it was probably the second time that I had drank. And I was saying, like, I'm just going to chill out now and it'll be lovely. And I never forget, he was upstairs in my sister's bedroom asleep. And the baby, not my husband. And I was downstairs and everyone was kind of making noise. And this is another thing. Anyone who made noise and affected his sleep, I would get violent.
Oh,
violent. Yeah. We had white noise and, like, no one could make noise. No one could come to our house after a certain time. Like, I really, I pulled myself away from everything as well. Like, I just, I didn't want to go to the mum and baby groups. I remember saying to my public health nurse when I got him home, I'm really worried about bringing him out in the cot, or not in the cot. I'm really worried about bringing him out in the buggy because what if he slips down the bassinet while I'm walking down the hill and I really hurt him? I mean, like,
yeah.
And I remember saying it and she was like, oh, don't worry about it, it's fine. And then the fact that, like, I couldn't breastfeed in the end, he wouldn't take it and he had a bottle, and I was really worried that I had, like, we were talking about, I let him down and that, you know, he wasn't getting the right nutrients and I was a bad mom. And oh, even thinking about it now, it actually still upsets me because, like, you know, you don't want to think that way about being a mom, but, like, when you're in the thick of it and you're so sleep deprived and you're feeling like this anxiety and this stress, this constant stress, it's very hard to pull yourself back and go, all right, cop on now, you can get through this, it'll be fine. It wasn't.
You don't have the coping mechanisms anymore.
No.
I remember that was where I started, was Eric was 15 months. And I stood there in the bedroom. I could, it's like a movie playing in my head. I stood there in the bedroom and just said to my husband, I've lost my ability to cope.
Yeah.
I don't know how to cope anymore.
Yeah.
And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, there was always something. So, you know, we figured it out eventually that I always must have been some way anxious.
Yeah.
But this was next level.
Yeah.
I was like, there's always something that I'm worried about. I just think about stuff over and over again. And I never kind of thought of it as anything postnatal because, number one, I was 15 months at it.
Yeah.
And number two, it wasn't always about the baby.
No.
It wasn't always about, you know, us. And it was stuff that I would be used to anyway. Sorry, I laugh because whenever I tell people, they think I'm mental. So whenever, like, I get on a bus.
Yeah, but you do realise we were actually mental, not in a derogatory way. Like,
yes.
But we had mental health issues. And people just assume because you have a new baby and it's the baby blues, or she's a bit stressed out because she's tired.
Yeah.
I really wish people would stop saying that because I took it from my mum, not in a bad way, but it's just her experience that, oh, you'll have the baby blues and then you'll be fine. And I remember her saying to me, oh, your relationship will be affected, but then you'll be grand. And I kept saying to her, when will it be grand again? Do you know, like, how long will it take for it to be grand?
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying, you know, it's just like, you were mental, like, you know.
Yeah, but that's
I'm still mental.
No, but I think that's the thing, is people use the term baby blues quite derogatory. Like, it's just the baby blues.
Yeah.
I would love it to be a case of, you're going to get the baby blues.
Yeah.
And they could last a week. They could last 24 hours. You may not get them. Or they could last forever. Your hormones have completely shifted.
Yeah.
I remember a moment where I had consistently gone back to the doctor 3 or 4 times in a row because I thought there was something wrong with Eric. There was. He has a problem with milk and he was struggling to digest. He just had a terrible gassy tummy. And the doctor said to me, when we see a mum come back to us this often, you know, we kind of have to raise the question mark around the mum. And that was the moment for me. He was 3 months old. I was like, oh, so it's me or him now. And if it's going to be him, there is nothing wrong with me. I will advocate for him. And that thought process went really fast in my head. And I went, you think I have depression, is it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I can be quite intimidating when I want to be quite intimidating. And I saw him, even as a GP, as a doctor, sit back. And he was like, oh, no, no, that's not what I'm saying. And I was like, it better not be what you're saying, because there's something wrong with my child. Don't point the finger at me. And that was the moment that I just pushed everything aside. And I was like, if I show any emotion here whatsoever, they're going to point the finger back at me. And if I'm going to advocate for him, there can't be anything wrong with me. And it took me until I was 15 months postpartum. It was actually my dad got sick and I was like, I can't process everything together in my head. And it was that point that I was like, I can't cope. Weirdly as well, my GP had changed 2 weeks before I gave birth. So I hadn't had a chance to build up a new relationship with my GP. And I think that really affected me as well, because my former GP, I had a relationship of trust with her. She knew I wasn't someone who wouldn't kind of be inclined to cope. She probably knew I was someone who was a little bit anxious about things. I would always go to the doctor if I'm anyway sick at all.
Me too, though,
And I don't mind the doctor turning around and saying, it's viral. It's really annoying. I hate that word.
Yeah, me too.
But I equally don't mind. What I don't want is to get into a situation, because I have done in the past, where I've gotten really sick and then it takes me weeks and weeks and weeks and months in some cases to recover. I'd like to head it off at the pass.
Yeah,
if it needs an antibiotic, fine. If it doesn't need an antibiotic, fine. It's, you know, like, whatever it is.
Yeah, your mind is put at ease, because are you the kind of like person who will Google your symptoms and then you'll pick the worst?
I live in the worst case scenario world. My husband is baffled on a daily basis at how I can default to worst case scenario.
So after Christmas, so I had this meltdown and my whole family just sat there shocked. Like, they'd seen me have meltdowns before, because I was very prone to anxiety pre-kids, pre-marriage, pre-everything. As a child, I was very anxious. And I remember them all kind of going, Erica, this isn't normal. And my mum pulled me aside and she was like, I think we need to go and talk to the doctor. And I took that as, I'm not doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know, there's something wrong with me because I want to relax and now I can't relax. Yeah, I never finished the story. The baby was up in bed, everyone was making noise, and I thought my husband would go up when the monitor went off. In fact, I thought any of my family would go up when the monitor went off, and everyone sat there, and I kept thinking, oh my God, like, again, now catastrophizing, he stopped breathing, he's gotten caught in something, he's after waking up and he realizes he's not at home. I went batshit crazy. Like, that's the only way I could describe it. And I just said, no, I'm fine. And I went to the doctor, and my husband had said to me, go to the doctor, I'm actually getting a bit worried about you now. And again, I took that as, you're only saying this now because you think that I can't cope, and I can cope, and I'll show you I can cope. So went to the doctor, explained everything. The doctor was like, I just think you're just a nervous mum, and I don't think you've anything to worry about. I think you just need to, you know, start dealing with things. And I told her that I was having issues in my relationship as a knock-on effect. And she said, maybe you want to look at that. So then I was like, brilliant. Okay, like, isn't this awful? I said, brilliant. I don't have postnatal depression. So it's just my marriage is totally fucked. So I have to just go sort that out now and everything will be fine. So I remember saying to my husband, look, we really do have to do something. And in February, we started marriage counselling. And it was only in marriage counselling that the counsellor brought up one day, she was like, I think, Erica, you need to control everything. And in order for you to control things, that's how you take the anxiety away from yourself. And I was saying, yeah, to a point. Yeah, absolutely. In my relationship. And we worked very hard on my relationship. But on the opposite side of things, I was still going as normal with my son. Like, I was the only one who could give him a bath properly. I was the only one who cut his nails. I was the only one who could say when he was onto solids, could prepare them, feed him, whatever. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to do anything. And so that was... yeah, that was February, and I went back to work part-time, and I remember I just totally burnt myself out because I was working from home, working all hours to try and prove to everyone I didn't have postnatal depression, I didn't have postnatal anxiety, I was fine, I was dealing with everything, and I really, really wasn't. And then it took me, so that was just after he was born, his first birthday came and went, and then it took me till his second birthday. After going to another counsellor who was like, you have some major stressors in your life, your relationship being one of them, outside interference being another, your perception of yourself, you have to be perfect. And if you're not perfect, then there's something massively wrong with you, in my eyes, say. And also, you feel like if there's anything, the slightest thing goes wrong, it's all your fault and you absolutely catastrophize. So she really mirrored what the marriage counsellor had said. And then I said, okay, so this is now February to February, two separate counsellors. I was like, I'm determined I'm going to stay off medication. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And then I got to September last year, so September 2018. And it was his second birthday. And it was always like a trigger around his birthday. And I, yeah, there was a few stressful things happened. And I suppose the only way I could describe it was I had a bit of a mental breakdown. And I don't care who hears this now and knows, because I want people to know that it's totally normal to have a mental breakdown and to be fine a few months later. But I went back to my counsellor and then I went to my GP, and luckily for me, the GP that I had always dealt with wasn't on. It was a locum GP, and I described to her how I felt. I was like, I've never felt this low in my life. I feel incredibly anxious. I'm getting panic attacks. I can't breathe properly. I feel like everything is just going wrong in my life, and I cannot bring myself up to like a happy place. And she just said to me, you know, maybe it's not, maybe some of the things are to do with your circumstances and how your life is right now, but also maybe it's actually to do with like the chemicals in your brain. Did you ever think about that? Because we literally went back to like when I was a child. And then she said to me, so maybe you need something. And considering now for so long I was like, no meds, no meds, no meds, eventually I said, I actually do think I need them, and I'm not gonna lie, and the first 2 weeks that you take these medication, you feel like you're gonna die. You feel so sick. It's like a massive hangover mixed in with morning sickness, mixed in with like just feeling awful, being really weepy 1 second, feeling okay, not being able to eat. It was terrible. And then after those 2 weeks I felt fine. And so I'm still on them now. And even coming here today now, I was like, make sure now I have my tablet. And it's a chemical imbalance. It's just something. Why didn't I do this long ago? Maybe.
If it was like one of your arms was longer than the other. Exactly. And they said you can take this pill to even them out, you'd go, yeah, grand. Yeah, and it would be normal, exactly. In inverted commas.
Yeah, and like what I hate is people are like, oh, you'll get addicted to those now. They're not addictive. Like there's lots that aren't addictive. Yeah, and it's exactly. Just this stigma around them, like, oh, you have to take a tablet so you feel better mentally. God, like, what are you doing? You know, all this kind of stuff.
Aren't we lucky that we live in an age that you can?
Yeah, and that we can talk about it now.
Yeah.
Because I can guarantee you, like, when my mom had me, she had major complications when she had me, and like dropped down to like 6 stone after 2 weeks of having me. Like, she was so sick. And I'm sure that if she had help like that when I was born, things would have been a lot different for her as well, you know. Now I can actually enjoy things in life. I can see the good in things. Like this, can you imagine, this is at the height of Mum Tribe, like when things were really starting to kick off. And I was like, oh my God, everything's going so, so well. And this always happens to me. In the back of my mind, it's like, everything's going so well. And then you'll have this like little thought that comes in going, it's going too well. Something is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then, well, I didn't, but my brain decided to explode. The main thing that I took from counselling is toxic people, cut dead boundaries, put them in place, don't move from them, and, you know, do what's right for you and for your family. And when, like, you know, people are like, your family, like, your family is who you make it. So it can be your partner, your wife, your husband, your child, it can be your parents, it can be your siblings. But also, if any of those people fall into the categories that I just said, then sometimes, unfortunately, you have to just kind of distance yourself from them. Because if they make you feel like shit about yourself, why are you having them around you? Like, there's one or two people in my life where they just absolutely wore me down till I really didn't have anything left in me and made me feel so awful. And now I just decided, I was like, you know, I actually think to live my life to the fullest, I can't worry about those people's opinions.
I consider myself extremely lucky. I only had to go to 3 cognitive behavioural therapy sessions. So lucky.
Like, that's genuinely way cheaper than what happened to me.
But equally, if I hadn't had those 3 sessions, I'm not a crier. So I'm the opposite of you. Yeah. I'm not a crier. Yeah. I do not show emotion.
You laugh when you're like, things yes. get a bit awkward. You're yes. like, haha, where's I like, in the corner? Oh, no.
But I don't show emotion. And I was in bits. Like, almost every day, which isn't like me at all. I used to be so bad when I was growing up that, like, I knew that occasionally you would need an actual release. So I'd stick on Titanic. It was the only thing that ever made me cry.
What?
Yeah, literally. Literally. But yeah, I don't cry. So I don't really release emotion a huge amount, but I use, I used to use anger quite a bit to get that out, and slamming doors and banging up the stairs. We don't have a stairs in our house, but if we did have a stairs in our house now, my poor husband would have gotten off an awful lot of stair bangs. But not in a good way.
Oh, fancy a stair bang.
No stair bangs. Carpet burns. Ellen, take it down the gutter. Take it down the gutter. But yeah, the therapist basically just made, I just clicked with her. Mm. And I think that's the other thing is sometimes people don't click with the right person.
Yeah.
But she was just like, you need to feel in control of things.
Yeah. Like what, me?
Similar, yeah. And then she basically said, you create a situation. I think of myself as Doctor Strange, where I try and think of all the Marvel solutions. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm just going to slip it
Can
in.
Can you just there. Tell people your obsession with Marvel, it's, like, because...
It's, yeah, it's high now at this point. We're re-watching all the movies as well.
And so I haven't watched any.
I'm in it. But no, I like to think of all the scenarios. Yeah. And literally, they go through my head really quickly. I can't really control it.
Yeah.
But sometimes those thoughts can be really intrusive. And I also have, like, if they could film what's going on inside my head, I'd be a millionaire. It's like blockbuster stuff that's going on in there. Like, it's full Technicolor. And it's every scenario and every possibility. And I think what she said to me was, if you've got a scenario and, you know, the outcome is a potential negative outcome, you know, what does that do to you? And chunk that down. And, you know, there's lots of different processes that people can use and, like, techniques and stuff. But that one has just really worked for me. And even putting a name on thinking something over and over again, so that rumination and catastrophization, going into worst case scenario, has really helped me, because I'm able to stop myself and go, Ellen, you're ruminating. You know, and it works in so many different aspects of my life, and I have been really lucky from that point of view. But I know April is like mental health month, and let's talk about it. And that's why I just think it's really important that I thought it was weird and I thought I failed because I wasn't able to cope. And I actually think it's just even there are people who haven't needed a diagnosis, but they've gone through an awful lot of shit months.
Yeah.
I honestly think that, you know, I know the health service is stretched to bits and I know we've got a lot of problems in this country, but if we could somehow even get people, even instead of that stupid 6-week checkup, lots of people did well the 6-week checkup. I did not. My child got checked in the 6-week checkup and I got a, do you want me to check your stitches? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
I do want you to check my
stitches.
They
asked me and I was like, well, you know, we all know what happened to me anyway. Botched job. And I'm in agony. And I'd say they were like, oh, God, just get her out the door.
But apparently there's some surgeries. So I was with the nurse as well. So I wasn't even with my GP for that checkup.
I was too. Yeah. I was actually surprised and quite annoyed.
Yeah, me too.
Because, okay, I'm not saying that nurses can't do their jobs. In fact, I know an awful lot of nurses that I personally think probably know more than doctors, because they're just like fantastic for information. But at the same time, I think if a doctor has treated you the whole way through your pregnancy, has that relationship with you like you had with yours.
That was my issue, was I had never met that nurse before. I was like, I don't know her. Like, she doesn't know who I am. Yeah. But I've heard that some surgeries have like a 10-point sheet where they ask you how you're coping. Yeah. And then they kind of go, maybe you could need a little something. I didn't even get asked how I was.
Yeah, and also I think just talking about it, there's nothing wrong with you if you're having a bad day. There's nothing wrong with you if you're having a bad week. And there's nothing wrong with you if you're having a bad month. I think what you need to do is actually look at how things are going and try and nip it in the bud rather than going on. Because like, I could have cut out a lot of months where I was incredibly unhappy, so lonely, really sad, and you know, every aspect of my life was being affected by it. If I had just taken it seriously, like you said with that check, when I went to the doctor, they kind of said, oh, keep an eye now, because you said that you were arguing with your husband a lot, and sometimes that can be postnatal depression. And I took that as like, I need to be defensive now and say, oh, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm absolutely fine, what are you talking about? Whereas if I had been sensible about it, I would have said, yeah, you know, I do think this is a problem, so can we sort it out? But I think because I was so worried that if I said something was wrong, then, you know, I was a failure. Like, you're not a failure. And I think we need to say it like loud to mums and women, like, you're not a failure if something like this happens to you. So if it's just, if it takes one conversation with one of your best friends or your husband or your mum or your sister or whoever, and just say, I'm not okay. And then that conversation might be able to get you help really quickly, and you don't have to go through the lengths that we've had to go through.
Motherhood is one of the biggest transitions, if not the biggest transition that you'll ever make in your life. So there are agencies out there that can help people. You can post them all.
I'll put them on swipe up links on my stories, and I'm going to put them in a highlight as well so that you can find them really easily. I'll have them on a post on Instagram as well, and I'll have it on the website. So
reach out is really the message. Sometimes it's a long journey, sometimes it's a short journey, but you know, we can all get there, and we can all support each other better, and hopefully, you know, maybe not as many women in the future will suffer if we as a generation try and change the stigmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been enlightening today. I hope that you guys have enjoyed it. Join us again for the Mum Tribe podcast a different time. I've been Ellen. Goodbye.
And I'm Erica. You know where to follow us. Mum Tribe Ireland. All the website things. You know where it is. It's going to be in the link anyway. Okay. Thanks for listening. Bye.